Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
A plane crashes into a Southern California neighborhood, multiple homes on fire. We're live on the ground with the latest. I'm Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC. Pandemic game changers. Merck requests emergency use for its antiviral pill, as AstraZeneca says its new drug both treats and prevents COVID. Southwest Airlines cancels more than 2,000 flights.
Why didn't they cancel them sooner or try to reschedule them?
People left stranded and furious.
I have about $4,500 charged on my card for all the different hotels, Ubers.
What's to blame for the disruptions, and is holiday travel at risk?
It's pretty incredible. It's like out of a movie.
A Navy engineer and his wife charged with espionage, accused of trying to sell nuclear submarine secrets in a peanut butter sandwich. How the feds landed the arrest. NBA superstar Kyrie Irving set to miss games because he won't get the shot.
We recognize he's not playing at home games.
The fallout from his decision and how much money he could lose. Severe flooding hits China. The U.S. opens talks with the Taliban. And the massive solar flare set to hit Earth.
Live from CNBC, the facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
Good evening. America could soon have a new and easy-to-use weapon in the fight to end the pandemic. The drug maker Merck asked the FDA today to authorize its antiviral pill for emergency use to treat people with mild to moderate COVID symptoms. If the agency signs off, it'll be the first pill shown to work against COVID, and Americans could get it by the end of the year. Meantime, AstraZeneca reports new data shows its antibody cocktail cuts the risk of severe COVID and death by half when given to COVID patients within a week of their first symptoms. On the booster shot front, a panel of FDA advisors scheduled to meet later this week. Members are set to discuss whether people who got Moderna and J&J shots should get an extra dose. Millions of Americans are not yet eligible for a booster. So far, U.S. regulators have approved extra doses only for some adults who got Pfizer's vaccine. For months now, health experts have debated whether it's safe to mix and match the vaccines. But we may get some clarity on that in the coming days. Dr. Fauci has now signaled studies on the effectiveness of getting different shots could be released this week. Former FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb is with us now, CNBC contributor, board member of Pfizer and Illumina, author of Uncontrolled Spread. Doctor, thank you. Potentially mixing vaccines has been a question for months now for lots of millions of Americans. Should the FDA and CDC have gotten to this sooner?
Well, they've had a study underway looking at this. NIH sponsored a big study looking at mixing and matching these different vaccines. That data may be ready for the FDA to review in the upcoming advisory committee meeting that it's having. I expect that data will show that there isn't any untoward effects from mixing these vaccines. That's what we've seen from the data overseas. But we wanted to have a big, large U.S. study to affirm that. And so that's going to help people get booster shots, because even if people try to maintain the same booster that they received previously, we know there's going to be inadvertent substitutions in the marketplace, and we know there's going to be situations where patients have a hard time accessing the same brand of vaccine that they had previously. And so the data affirming the safety of mixing these vaccines is going to help make this process for getting the boosters more seamless.
Dr. Gottlieb, mask requirements are still prevalent in many parts of the U.S., regardless of vaccination status. As cases continue to decline, when can those masking rules be lifted?
Well, look, I think this is going to be a local decision based on what local prevalence is. We're seeing cases overall nationally decline, but I think that's masking what's really going on nationally. You're seeing sharp declines in the South, where Delta's largely run its course. So cases are coming down very sharply in populous states like Texas and Florida. But you're seeing pretty dense epidemics in the Midwest and the Plain states. And we still don't know how the Northeast and the Northern states are going to fare. They have not really had their Delta wave yet. I think there's a presumption that high vaccination rates and high prior infections is going to create a wall of immunity that's going to prevent Delta from getting into those parts of the country in the same way it's affected other parts. But I still think that there's a Delta wave that's going to sweep across the northern states as well in the Northeast. It's not going to be nearly as dense as what you saw in the South, but we still are probably in store for more spread. So I think decisions about masking are going to be made at a local level. There's certainly parts of the country right now where prevalence is low enough that they can make decisions to suspend mask mandates in certain regions.
Dr. Merck has asked the FDA for emergency authorization for its pill to treat COVID. If approved, what could that mean for deaths in the U.S. and around the globe?
Yeah, look, I think what we're seeing is an overall significant improvement in our therapeutic toolbox against this virus, not just with vaccines and therapeutics, but also with more accessible diagnostic tests. The top line data from this Merck study was probably the best treatment effect we've seen from an orally available antiviral drug in the treatment of any respiratory pathogen. So this could make a real difference.
Dr. Gottlieb, thank you so much. Southwest Airlines is scrambling to control a travel crisis tonight. The company canceled more than 1,800 flights over the weekend and grounded another 360 of them today. That's according to the FlightAware tracking service. Here you can see long lines at Southwest counters in Dallas, Nashville, and San Jose. Similar scenes played out at airports across the country. The cancellations have left thousands of passengers stranded and a lot of them upset.
I have about $4,500 charged on my card pending for all the different hotels, Ubers, everything that we had to go back and forth with.
They had to have known something was up. Why didn't they tell us? Why didn't they cancel them sooner or try to reschedule them? Now it doesn't look like anything's scheduled. They don't have any flights for the next couple days out of here.
Well, officials at Southwest blame the cancellations on delays and bad weather, on air traffic control problems and staffing issues. They say it's not because of backlash over the company's vaccine mandate. And the union for Southwest pilots says the pilots are not calling out sick to protest the vaccine requirement. CNBC's Phil LeBeau is with us now. Phil, the other airlines appear to be managing everything just fine. What's happening with Southwest?
Well, Southwest is a victim of being a little too aggressive when it comes to setting the schedule for this last weekend. So when you had the weather problems in Florida, air traffic control issues on Friday night, what happened after that? They had to cancel a bunch of flights. And Southwest is a point-to-point system, Shep. So when one pilot is canceled or a flight is canceled, then you start to get crews out of place very quickly as opposed to other airlines, which the hub and spoke model, so that when they have cancellations, all right, maybe they're not being able to fly one place. They have a crew that can, you know, pick up another flight. So this is going to take a couple of days still for Southwest to straighten out.
You know, Phil, the pilots union for Southwest says there's no connection to the COVID vaccine mandate, but they're not happy with that either.
Right. They're not happy with the airline management on a number of levels and haven't been for some time, Shep. Look, they take great pains to say this is not a sick out. This is not our way of putting something, you know, sticking our finger in the eye of the management by calling in sick. And so there are more cancellations. And they say that the sick rate, if you look at it now compared to earlier this summer, it's no different. But they have a number of issues with management. This is a sore point that needs to be rectified.
Phil, holiday travel coming up. Is this a glimpse of what's to come?
Possibly. If some of these airlines are far too aggressive, look, we saw this earlier this summer with Spirit. We're seeing it now with Southwest. If some of these airlines are too aggressive and they don't have the staffing there, they're just going to have to realize we cannot bring back as many flights as is out there in terms of demand. So we'd like to honor the demand. We'd like to fly more. But if you don't have the staffing, and remember, you had a lot of pilots, Shep, who took early buyouts a year ago, so you don't have as many pilots in the system.
Yep. Phil LeBeau, thank you. A U.S. Navy engineer and his wife arrested and charged with trying to sell nuclear-powered submarine secrets to a foreign power. Investigators say the buyer was actually an undercover FBI agent. The feds say an undisclosed foreign country alerted the FBI back in December after it received a mysterious package containing U.S. Navy documents, an SD card, and a letter. It read, "Please forward this letter to your military intelligence agency. I believe this information will be of great value to your nation. This is not a hoax." An undercover FBI agent started communicating with the package's sender through encrypted emails and otherwise, pretending to be a foreign country that wanted what he was selling. NBC's Ken Delaney now. Ken, the details on this, it's an incredible story.
Really remarkable, Shep. Jonathan and Diana Tebbe are charged under the Atomic Energy Act with attempting to sell the secrets of the reactor of the Virginia-class nuclear submarine At $3 billion each, those are some of the most advanced weapons in the American arsenal. Now, the FBI got onto this couple, as you said, back in December 2020 when an unnamed country received this packet of materials. And the fact that the FBI obtained those materials suggests that, and other clues, that this was an allied country rather than an adversary. But in any event, the FBI essentially ran a sting operation, began communicating with this couple, and induced them to, instead of to transmitting the material electronically, to go physically to locations, what are known in spy parlance as dead drops, where the FBI was waiting and recording. And at one of those dead drops, Jonathan Tebbe allegedly hid a memory card inside of a peanut butter sandwich, in another case, inside of a sealed Band-Aid wrapper. The FBI, under the guise of being, again, this foreign intelligence agency, paid this couple about $100,000 in cryptocurrency, Shep, but actually Jonathan Tebbe expressed an interest in getting as much as $5 million for all the secrets that he had. Now, this couple is facing these serious charges. They are scheduled to appear in court tomorrow in West Virginia. And because this involved atomic energy, these charges carry life in prison terms, Shep. And obviously, Jonathan Tebbe was a Navy engineer. His wife was a PhD in philosophy who was teaching at a private school in Annapolis. And that school said in a statement today, they are shocked and appalled by these charges, Shep.
Ken Delanian, thank you. Officials say at least two people are dead tonight, two injured, after a small plane crashed into a California neighborhood. It happened in the town of Santee, just outside San Diego. A spokesperson for UPS said one of those killed was an employee after the plane struck one of its trucks. Officials described as a brutal scene with debris extending almost a block away. The plane was a twin-engine Cessna C-340. Officials say the plane left from San Diego and was headed to Yuma, Arizona, when it had issues and tried to land at a nearby field. Local coverage now, NBC 7 San Diego, and their reporter, Dana Griffin, is live on scene. Dana?
Yeah, behind me you can see the aftermath of this horrific plane crash. The debris-filled stretch is at least another block. We know that two homes appear to be destroyed, five others sustain some sort of damage. Behind me, you can see just this burnt-out shell of a UPS truck where we have confirmed one of their drivers was killed in this crash. Now, the Cessna went down around 12:15. Video shot by witnesses shows a huge ball of fire. According to those witnesses, the plane crashed in the street and a wing clipped a UPS truck that happened to be right at the intersection. Now, the driver of the truck is one of two confirmed fatalities. After impact, the fuselage of the plane then slid toward the homes, and then a huge ball of fire. That thick black smoke poured into the sky, and when the fire was out, the deputy fire chief described it as a brutal scene. Now, out of those homes that we told you were destroyed, luckily, one was empty. I spoke with the homeowner's sister, who was emotional yet grateful her family survived.
My brother's house was one of the houses that was hit. They were not home. We are very, very, very lucky they were not home. From what I understand, there are a couple people who didn't make it. So I'm so sorry. It's pretty terrifying. And this happens pretty frequently with Gillespie Field being right here. I feel like this happens at least once a year.
So a woman and her husband were taken to the hospital. We have not yet received an update on their conditions. And again, two fatalities, a UPS driver, the other likely the pilot. Shep?
Dana Griffin, thank you. Face-to-face with the Taliban. A U.S. delegation meeting with the group for the first time since U.S. troops pulled out. What they discussed and how the State Department says things went. An ex-associate of Rudy Giuliani set to stand trial. Who the federal judge said he's trying to weed out during jury selection. And Netflix. The streaming giant teaming up with Walmart to engage with fans like never before. Now you'll be able to buy some of what you see on the shows.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.
The Taliban says the U.S. will not formally recognize their role, but will begin providing Afghanistan with humanitarian aid. They say that was the outcome of 2 days of talks in Doha, Qatar, between U.S. and Taliban officials. A spokesman for the State Department wouldn't confirm whether aid was committed, but did say it came up in those talks. He said the discussions were candid and professional with the U.S. delegation, reiterating that the Taliban will be judged on its actions, not only its words. NBC's Josh Letterman covers the State Department for us. Josh, this was the first face-to-face meeting since U.S. troops left in August, I believe. What was on the table today?
A top U.S. priority, Shep, is ensuring safe passage out of Afghanistan for U.S. citizens and Afghan partners. And on that, the Taliban have been showing some flexibility, with reports even today of another evacuation flight leaving Kabul. The U.S. also wants assurances that the Taliban will contain the terrorism threat now that the U.S. military is out. The U.S. and the Taliban have a common enemy here, the Islamic State affiliate in Afghanistan. Still, the Taliban are saying that they don't need U.S. help and are handling the Islamic State themselves. Now, the big ask for the Taliban is financial. Roughly 40% of Afghanistan's GDP comes from foreign aid. After this weekend's meetings in Doha, no signs that the U.S. will unfreeze some $10 billion in central bank funds. But the Taliban spokesman has been saying the Biden administration did agree to provide humanitarian assistance. Secretary of State Blinken has said any aid wouldn't flow through the Taliban, but instead be routed through independent groups to ensure it's used properly. And the Taliban seems to be okay with that for now, pledging after the meeting to cooperate with charitable groups who are delivering aid. The State Department also says it used the summit to stress human rights, including meaningful participation of women and girls in Afghan society. That's a promise that the Taliban has made that human rights groups say so far has not been met. The Taliban's interim government includes no women in the cabinet. And in most of the country, school for girls remains closed. For now, the two sides will continue talking. The Taliban saying the U.S. agreed to hold more face-to-face meetings in the future if required. Shep?
Josh, thank you. Rudy Giuliani's former associate Lev Parnas is set to go on trial tomorrow. Federal prosecutors say the Soviet-born Florida businessman was part of a conspiracy to funnel foreign money to U.S. politicians with illegal campaign contributions. Lev Parnas is also accused of using a shell company to disguise a $325,000 donation to a pro-Trump super PAC. Parnas' alleged partner in crime was Igor Fruman. He pleaded guilty last month and admitted to soliciting illegal campaign donations from a Russian national. The judge says he'll question potential jurors during jury selection for Parnas' trial to try to weed out anybody who has a strong bias towards Giuliani or former President Trump. Parnas first made headlines back in 2019 when it came to light that he and Igor Fruman helped Giuliani dig up dirt on Joe Biden in Ukraine. NBC News analyst Danny Savalos is with us now. Danny, how will the judge go about trying to identify strong bias in these jurors? Is it really realistic to find jurors who don't have opinions in either direction other than the former president?
No, it's not realistic, and even the government has conceded that. However, the test isn't whether or not a juror has heard of or has strong feelings about Trump and Giuliani. It's whether or not those feelings will interfere with their ability to sit fairly and impartially as jurors. But notice the government pulled a strategic maneuver to minimize the importance of Giuliani and Trump by dropping one of the charges, most notably the one that related to the influence charges for trying to oust the U.S. Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch. That was a couple of years ago, I know, a long time ago to remember. But by dropping that, the prosecution is trying to make Giuliani and Trump less of an issue. They can never make them a non-issue, but less of an issue. And the judge has to sift through that now.
Well, the prosecutor told the judge that he expects former President Trump and Rudy Giuliani to be mentioned very peripherally in this case. You see that happening?
No, I see it being mentioned peripherally and then some, a lot more than peripherally. Because after all of these charges, the sine qua non, the genesis of these charges, all roads lead back to Giuliani and Trump. So even though the charges that used to bring in Trump and Giuliani more closely have been dropped by the government, they're still going to be mentioned. And of course, it's in the U.S. attorney's interest to say that Trump and Giuliani will be mentioned peripherally because they're going into jury selection. They don't want to lose jurors that they like because they find out that they have strong feelings about Giuliani and Trump, and that perhaps they see Parnas as a sympathetic figure. Remember, Parnas came out very quickly and offered information to Congress, data, emails, all kinds of different things. So the government wants to reduce the image of Parnas as a kind of political prisoner and instead paint him as just a common criminal looking to make a fast buck.
Danny, if you were representing Lev Parnas in court, what would your strategy be?
Bring in Trump. Bring in Giuliani as much as you possibly can, to the extent the judge lets you, and make it clear that Parnas is not them. He is somebody that was essentially bamboozled by them, and argue that Parnas, this campaign finance law, I didn't know anything about that. I thought I was acting at the direction of the president, and I thought I was acting at the direction of Rudy Giuliani, America's mayor, after all. That would be my approach. But Parnas's defense has already done a fine job anyway without me.
Danny Savalas, thank you. Called out on Capitol Hill, a whistleblower blasts senior leadership with the Capitol Police. What the top bosses allegedly did wrong during that attempted insurrection on January 6th. And on Friday, we got a dismal jobs report. This week, we take a deeper dive into what's really going on and who exactly is missing from the workforce.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.
A popular fast food chain is asking corporate employees to actually work at the restaurant. Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers reports one-third of its corporate staff volunteered just last week to work as fry cooks and cashiers. It's their solution to the nationwide labor shortage that's showing little sign of improving. This week, we're launching a new series called The Lost Workers. Tonight, we'll explain who some of the missing ones are and why they're on the sidelines. CNBC senior economics reporter Steve Leisman is with us. Steve, you looked through some new data for this. What'd you find?
Shep, three classes of people stand out: women, new retirees, and immigrants. For example, of the 3.1 million fewer workers in the workforce, 63%, or about 2 million, are women. This is the reverse of most downturns. And women aged 20 to 34, they represent about half of the lost women workers. That's an indication child care issues are playing a major role in their absence. A decline in immigration. It began in the Trump administration before the pandemic, came nearly to a halt during the pandemic, and has eased only somewhat with the Biden administration. David Beyer, he's a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. He estimates there are 500,000 lost legal immigrant workers in this country now. Finally, the number of Americans 65 and over leaving the workforce each month ratcheted up to a new level with the pandemic, and it's yet to return. 145,000 Americans in this age group, they drop out of the labor force every month. That's up from 93,000. Do the math. 1 million extra retirees right now. Some workers, they may not be lost, they could be misplaced. Wealthier people, they moved out of the cities. Poor, low-income workers, they didn't have that choice. That could be a reason the unemployment rate in the 10 biggest cities in the U.S. is now above the national average. Before the pandemic, the two were equal. The unknown question, can these lost workers be found? That is, brought back into the workforce to help fill the 11 million open jobs, Shep.
Big number. Steve, thanks. Our Lost Workers series continues all this week. Tomorrow, vaccine mandates for schools is a requirement to get the shot, making it even harder to find teachers. That's tomorrow on the news. An emergency landing at a busy New York airport. Panicked passengers hurrying to get off the plane. Reports of a suspicious device. And now it seems it may have all been a misunderstanding. One of the best players in all the NBA taking a stance that'll have him sitting out games and risking losing millions. Vaccine rules and personal choice going one-on-one as we approach the bottom of the hour and the top of the news on CNBC. Women are better prepared for the golden years, and that's what's topping CNBC on the money. Women investors outperforming their male counterparts, getting more positive returns on their portfolios. That's according to a study by Fidelity Investments. The data also reveals that 67% more women are investing beyond their retirement accounts. That's a 50% jump from just 3 years ago. You can now Netflix and shop. The streaming company partnering with Walmart to create a dedicated digital hub on the retailer's website. That means you can buy merchandise from the smash hit Squid Game or any of your other favorite shows like Stranger Things, Cobra Kai, or Money Heist. It marks the first time Netflix has entered into such an agreement with a national retailer. And we're loving this. McDonald's giving away free breakfast to teachers, faculty, and staff for five straight days this month as a thank you for all they do. It started today, lasts through Friday. Anyone who qualifies needs to show a valid work ID for free breakfast. On Wall Street, the Dow down 250, S&P down 30, and the NASDAQ down 93. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news. A crypto nightmare. Hackers going after crypto platforms in the U.S., and victims say having everything stolen isn't even the biggest problem. Cows, they have a lot of gas. Scientists say that gas is warming the planet, so now they're suggesting a new diet plan. But first, one of the NBA's biggest stars takes a stance that has him missing games. The league's regular season just a week away now, but Kyrie Irving may have to sit out roughly half of all games because of a local vaccine mandate. And the Brooklyn Nets appear to be coming to terms with the possibility.
I think we recognize he's not playing at home games. So, we are going to have to for sure play without him this year. So it just depends on when, where, and how much.
Under New York City rules, everybody must prove they've received at least one COVID vaccine dose to enter indoor gyms. That includes Barclays Center, the Nets' home arena. If Kyrie Irving remains unvaccinated, the decision could cost him millions of dollars. Here's CNBC's Perry Russum.
Kyrie Irving has been the face of vaccine hesitancy in the NBA, forcing the Brooklyn Nets to game plan for life without one of their stars.
I think we're still trying to process all the possibilities, and that might take us some time.
The seven-time All-Star last publicly spoke about his vaccination status a week and a half ago.
We'd love to just keep that private and handle it the right way with my team and go forward.
Irving did practice with the team over the weekend after it was ruled the Nets practice facility was private property, not falling under New York City's vaccine rules.
How big of a deal is this that Kyrie Irving cannot play in home games?
It's a major deal for the league.
Shams Charania from The Athletic says Irving could miss a total of 43 games in the regular season, all of the home games and the games against the New York Knicks. The Washington Post reports it could cost him more than $16 million in fines.
How quickly do you think the NBA wants this whole thing with Kyrie to be wrapped up?
There's no question for everyone involved. The quicker this is resolved, the better. But, obviously there is no resolution right now.
One of the most vocal players against getting vaccinated has been Andrew Wiggins. Like Irving, the Golden State Warrior would have missed every home game. He says he felt forced to take the shot.
It came down to get the vaccination or don't play basketball.
LeBron James recently confirming he has been vaccinated, but held back from advising others.
Well, I don't feel like, for me personally, that I should get involved in what other people should do for their bodies and their livelihoods. It would be me talking about somebody if they should, take this job or not.
Still not clear why Irving won't get vaccinated. He keeps talking about his privacy, but never says exactly why he won't get vaccinated. More and more players are taking the shot. A league source tells us 96% of NBA players are now vaccinated. We are 1 week away from opening night, Shep.
Perry Russum, live tonight in Boston. Thank you. After a 30-month hiatus because of COVID, runners from around the world once again raced in the Boston Marathon today. Organizers rolled out several safety protocols. Runners had to show proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test. The field, much smaller than normal, about two-thirds the usual size. And the race began with a rolling start to allow for social distancing. But that didn't stop the crowds from lining the 26.2-mile course. COVID canceled last year's marathon. And this year, organizers postponed it from the spring for the first time in its 125-year history. Kenyans swept the field today. Benson Capruto won the men's race, breaking the tape in 2 hours, 9 minutes, 51 seconds. And Diana Kipyoge won the women's race, finishing 2 hours, 24 minutes, 45 seconds. The top American finishers in the men's and women's races were both about 2 minutes behind the winners. The first person to be charged with pandemic loan fraud has now been sentenced to more than 4 years in federal prison. And authorities say he also faked his own suicide. His name is David Adler Stavely, the man here. And officials say it happened like this. Stavely and a partner claimed they owned four businesses hit by the pandemic. And because of that, they tried to get more than $500,000 from the government in loans. Someone noticed and tipped off the police, and they found it was all a lie. In May of last year, both were arrested and released on home detention. But then prosecutors say Stavely removed his electronic monitoring device, left suicide notes, and left his car unlocked near the Atlantic Ocean. Over the next 3 months, prosecutors say he used fake IDs and stolen license plates, even changed his own phone number. But police managed to track him down just north of Atlanta. A judge sentenced him to 4 years, 8 months in a federal prison. Crypto making a major comeback today. The price of Bitcoin up more than 3% and trading north of $57,000 for a single coin for the first time since May. It's now about 12% away from hitting its all-time highs. Investors aren't the only ones cashing in on the crypto surge. Hackers are draining many accounts on Coinbase. That's the biggest crypto platform in the U.S. Now, users are taking aim at the company's customer service department. They say Coinbase is leaving them hanging, and hackers walk away with hundreds of thousands of dollars. Eamon Javers reports, in an ongoing CNBC investigation, crypto nightmare.
I was kind of like panicked, to tell you the truth.
Eric and Molly Richardson say they saved nearly $1.1 million worth of cryptocurrency in a Coinbase account. But then in July, Eric got an alert on his phone. The message said someone had logged onto their account. Eric clicked on the text, logged in, and soon received an email that their two-factor authentication, which verifies security settings, had been changed.
He was like in a state of shock. So I tried to help him. I tried to stay calm. And I, you know, looked up Coinbase online, trying to figure out how to get a hold of their customer service.
Like thousands of other Coinbase customers, the Richardsons say they got nowhere when they tried to get immediate help. That's because the company didn't offer any kind of live phone support. Email was the only option.
And within the 20 minutes that we sent the email, somebody had done 110 different transactions, sending out about 21 Bitcoin.
In all, the hackers stole some $700,000 of the couple's savings. They're not the only ones. As CNBC reported in August, cryptocurrency holders across the country have been victimized by hackers who drain their accounts. And then they can't even get anyone on the phone to resolve the issue. Coinbase said in August that it had finally set up a phone number for customers to call if their account had been taken over. But that doesn't seem to be fixing the problem. Customers told us the live support was useless, a joke, and it was only for accounts that are actively locked. So we wanted to see what would happen when the Richardsons called Coinbase's new customer support line.
I'm going to call and see if I can get my account finally unlocked. And maybe should I ask if they will give me my money back?
A Coinbase agent does answer.
Well, I got locked out of my account about 2 months ago, and I haven't been able to get back in. Somebody stole 21 Bitcoin out of it.
The agent tells Richardson he actually doesn't have access to his case file, instead saying he should respond to a Coinbase email he'd already responded to. A Coinbase spokesperson says, "We recognize the challenges some of our customers have experienced with their Coinbase accounts. Improving our customer experience continues to remain a top priority." Eric says his big regret is not doing more to safeguard his Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Chainlink before the theft, which he thinks happened because that text alert was likely a phishing attack to steal his information. One option he considered but didn't follow up on was a hardware device used for cold storage of cryptocurrencies.
I'm beating myself up every day because I have my friends' voices in my head. Eric put it on cold storage, and I just didn't.
Nicole DeSico, who helps clients secure their cryptocurrency, says cold storage is virtually hack-proof. You get a private key, which is like a password, to buy and sell crypto, and you store that key offline.
When you keep your funds in cold storage, you own those funds.
You have access to them. They're offline, away from hackers.
Of course, the problem with even that solution is owners can lose their passwords or something can go wrong with the device itself. As far as the Richardsons, soon after our interview, Coinbase restored access to their account. They also received a credit from Coinbase, but nowhere near what they lost. Just $500 worth of Bitcoin.
It felt like they kicked sand in my face. That's what made me think, is there even anybody senior at Coinbase looking at this?
Coinbase told the Richardsons that it won't refund their savings because the company was not responsible for the hack. Customers have filed more than 12,000 complaints against the company with government and consumer agencies since 2016. Meanwhile, an additional 1,500 complaints have been filed just since our story aired in August. Most of those over customer service, Shep.
Well, more than $1 million worth of Bitcoin at today's numbers. That's a lot of dough. Thank you, sir. A Capitol Police whistleblower is accusing the agency's senior leaders of serious failures during and leading up to that attempted insurrection on the Capitol on January 6th. In a letter to congressional leaders last month, the whistleblower claimed two of the agency's top bosses mishandled intelligence of the major threat they were facing and failed to pass it along. The whistleblower also accuses the chiefs of sitting back and watching the riot unfold instead of taking appropriate action while officers were literally fighting for each other, their lives, and the Congress. In the letter, the whistleblower blasts Congress for doing nothing to hold the two Capitol Police bosses accountable. In response, the U.S. Capitol Police executive team put out a statement saying, "A lot has changed since January 6th. Although there is more work to do, many of the problems described in the letter have been addressed." A bomb scare led to an emergency landing at New York's LaGuardia Airport on Saturday. The New York Daily News reports a woman saw a passenger scrolling through what she thought were bomb-making instructions on a phone. Then, according to the report, she pulled out a device and started fidgeting with it. She thought that it was setting off a timer on a detonator. Listen to how a pilot told the air traffic control.
"We are declaring an emergency. We have a situation here where a suspicious person has an item that looks like an explosive device."
And a video taken there on the ground showed emergency responders surrounding a man on his stomach with his arms splayed out. It's not clear to us if this is the same person who caused the emergency landing. Either way, it was all a massive misunderstanding. The New York Daily News reports the passenger was just a vintage camera aficionado. He was looking at pictures and videos of cameras on his phone and then later took out his own camera and started adjusting it. Authorities also did not charge the passenger, saying he didn't make a verbal threat and certainly wasn't carrying a suspicious item. New test results sending people back to the water off Southern California coast, but only some beaches given the all clear after the recent oil spill. California making some changes on the toy aisle, becoming the first state in the country to make the move. Plus, cows, they pass gas, and then that gas warms the planet, which isn't good for them or us. So scientists decided to try feeding them a little seaweed. A big breakthrough next. And just into CNBC, the Texas governor, Greg Abbott, issued an executive order on vaccine mandates for everyone from employees to customers. The details on that ahead. Just in, out of Texas, the governor there just banned all vaccine mandates. Governor Greg Abbott did it by executive order. He says the vaccine is safe and effective, but that it should always remain voluntary and never forced. This expands the previous ban on mandates, which applied only to ones issued by state governments. But the governor of Texas says he took issue with President Biden's push to have employers require the shot, so he decided to ban all mandates. A rescue operation underway in northern China after flooding there killed at least 18 people, 120,000 others forced to evacuate. Crews working overtime to repair several damaged dikes in the province of Shaanxi. Local officials say a nearby river had its highest flood peak in nearly four decades. Torrential rain last week triggered landslides across more than 70 cities in the area. The deluge destroying more than 17,000 homes, nearly 500,000 acres of farmland. That's more than double the size of New York City. The crisis comes just 3 months after floods in Henan province killed more than 300 people and displaced more than 1 million others. Cow burps, they're rough on the environment. Cows, as a matter of fact, release a lot of gas, as cows do. And that gas is warming the planet. So researchers in New England are trying out a brand new diet plan to give cows and all of us a little relief. Here's CNBC's Diana Olick.
On a research farm at the University of New Hampshire, scientists are feeding cows seaweed in an attempt to reduce the amount of methane they produce.
How much methane actually comes from cows?
About 25% of methane are produced directly from fermentation by the cows.
Okay, so that's burping and farting together?
Both.
Both.
But
okay.
About 95% is burping.
All that gas is contributing to global heating.
Despite their best efforts to try to find ways to reduce that sort of carbon hoofprint, there's lots more that can be improved in terms of changing cows' diet. We think that seaweed can be part of that solution.
There are 250 species of seaweed in the Gulf of Maine, and many also grow on the West Coast as well as in Europe.
So it's a giant repository for us to look for other potential solutions.
After receiving a $5 million charitable grant over the summer for the first study, Bigelow Labs was just granted $10 million from the USDA for further research into seaweed feed.
While the purpose of the study was to reduce methane emissions, they had to be very careful that the seaweed didn't affect milk production, because that's what makes these cows valuable to the market.
Farmers get paid based on milk butter fat and milk protein, so our goal is to reduce methane, but at the same time not reducing those milk components.
Researchers say they think the seaweed may actually improve that performance, because reducing all that burping and farting allows the cows to use that energy instead for milk and beef production.
We think this is a great market opportunity for dairy production that's also a major commodity for the state.
Not to mention a breath of fresh air for the planet. For the news, I'm Diana Olick in Durham, New Hampshire.
Well, some Southern California beaches are back open today after that massive oil spill last week. Officials in Huntington Beach made the call after tests showed no sign of oil-associated toxins in the water. Surfers wasted no time catching some waves, too. That is not the case in nearby Newport Beach, where officials are still waiting for their test results. Crews in hazmat suits still combing through the sand to remove tar balls. Last week, officials say somewhere between 25,000 and 130,000 gallons of oil spilled into the ocean after a ship's anchor hit an underwater pipeline. They say the damage from the anchor likely happened several months to a year before the pipeline actually ruptured. Investigators still haven't identified which ship may be to blame. It's official. California will require large retailers to have gender-neutral toy sections in addition to toys for boys and girls. California Governor Gavin Newsom signed the bill into law over the weekend. Our own Jane Wells reported on this back in March when it was still just an idea. The law takes effect in 2024. Businesses that don't comply will face a fine of $250 for the first offense and $500 after that. A solar flare explosion on the sun. It's now raising alarm bells here on Earth. The problem, scientists say, could happen tonight. Plus, Captain Kirk's trip delayed. Blue Origin forced to push back the launch, making William Shatner wait a little longer to become the oldest person ever in space.
The thing I really want to do is come back down.
Hopefully that works out. And more breaking news into CNBC just a moment ago. An update on the Gabby Petito case. We've just learned about answers that we could get tomorrow. We may soon get an answer to one of the main questions in the death of Gabby Petito, how she died. CNBC has just learned that the Teton County coroner will hold a press event tomorrow to talk about the case. Gabby Petito's death, of course, was ruled a homicide last month, but authorities gave no details. Her boyfriend, Brian Laundrie, is still missing and is the only person of interest in the case. Of course, more on what the coroner had to say tomorrow night on the news. Captain Kirk is going to have to wait an extra day to go to space. William Shatner and his three fellow astronauts grounded because of the weather. Blue Origin made an announcement in a statement just yesterday. The National Weather Service predicting strong winds in the air, gusts to nearly 75 miles an hour.
The 75 mile an hour winds is overwhelming. That's close to hurricane. I don't want to be on top of a rocket in 75 mile an hour winds.
Wise. The launch now scheduled for Wednesday. William Shatner's 90 years old these days. He'll be the oldest person to travel to space. Shatner says he was personally invited by Jeff Bezos to take part in the mission. Shatner said to be joined by the company's vice president of mission and flight operations, as well as two civilians who paid for their trips. Those tickets expected to cost more than $250,000 each. Weather on Earth isn't the only concern for scientists. A massive solar storm is set to hit Earth starting tonight, and scientists warn it could cause serious disruptions. On Saturday, a solar flare similar to the one you see here erupted on the surface of the sun directly facing Earth. Authorities say the resulting geomagnetic storm could disrupt power grids, knock satellites out of whack, and move the northern lights as far south as New York, Wisconsin, and Washington State. They say it's most likely to cause problems tonight and into tomorrow. Michio Kaku is with us now, professor of theoretical physics at the City University and City College of New York City, author of the book The God Equation, The Quest for the Theory of Everything. Professor, it's good to talk to you again. Explain to us how an explosion on the sun, nearly 93 million miles away, potentially causes big issues here.
Well, the sun last Saturday had a temper tantrum. There was an explosion on one of the sunspots, ejecting a huge amount of material, gas, and ions into outer space. And it took a few days to go 93 million miles, and it's going to hit the Earth tonight. And just think about it. We astronomers and physicists are keeping our fingers crossed, hoping that we're going to dodge the bullet. But in a worst-case scenario, it could cause blackouts, it could damage our satellites, it could even endanger our astronauts in outer space. This is something that is of great concern.
And I'm reading, Michio, that it could move the northern lights. That sounds science fiction, you know?
That's right. We're talking about the Aurora Borealis, normally seen in Iceland and Alaska. And we might be able to see it as far south as New York City. Now, that's the best-case scenario. The worst case scenario is damage to the telecommunications network around the United States. Our astronauts in the International Space Station, even the launch from Florida, that could be endangered from Texas. That could be endangered because of the fact that we're talking about a storm of ions in the atmosphere. Now, remember, a big one, a really big one like the one of 1859, the Carrington event, that could cause a planetary blackout. Think about that. Hundreds of cities blacked out simultaneously in a worst case scenario. That could cause food riots everywhere as refrigerators go out. A mass rioting because burglar alarms and the police are paralyzed. Astronauts being forced to hide in secluded chambers within the International Space Station. We're talking about a nightmare scenario if we have a giant solar flare like what happened in 1859. But back then, of course, that was at the beginning of the electric age, so we didn't really miss too much.
Yeah.
But now it could paralyze the Earth.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen. Michio Kaku, it's always good to see you. Thank you. This is National Coming Out Day. And DC Comics is announcing its new Superman is bisexual. John Kent is the child of Clark Kent and Lois Lane, who inherits his dad's powers. He'll start a relationship with a male friend in the next comic. This isn't the only way this new character is modernizing his story. So far, young John Kent has protested refugee deportations, battled climate change-induced wildfires, and stopped a school shooting. Superman joins a growing list of newly out superheroes, including Batwoman, Green Lantern, and Batman's sidekick, Robin. The new comic, Superman, Son of Kal-El, Episode 5, will be available coming up on November the 9th. James Bond can save the world, but he might not be able to save the theaters. Not all of them, at least. The latest Bond movie called No Time to Die missed expectations at the box office. Opening weekend, the film brought in $56 million in the U.S., Experts had predicted more than $60 million on the very low end. Some analysts were hoping the film could even break $100 million. Still, this is the fourth best opening for a Bond film in the franchise's 60 years. Globally, No Time to Die has snagged more than $313 million since its release 2 weeks ago. MGM says about a quarter of moviegoers who saw Bond over the weekend said it was their first time in the theater in at least a year and a half.
Wow.
Texas A&M may have knocked off top-rated Alabama this weekend, but the school's paying the price for the celebration. The SEC fined A&M $100,000 after fans stormed the field. A&M upset Bama with a game-winning field goal. It was 41-38. Conference officials say this is the school's second violation. Aggie fans also stormed the field back in 18 under the SEC's policy. If it happens again, the next fine will be up to $250,000. Worth every single solitary penny. 30 seconds on a race to the finish. At least two people are dead after a small plane crashed in a neighborhood near San Diego and destroyed two houses. Witnesses say that plane clipped a UPS truck, killed the driver before it slid towards homes and exploded. And now you know the news of this Monday, October the 11th, 2020. I went to a game of my own this weekend, and I screamed a lot, which is why I lost this voice. But with Alabama losing and Ole Miss winning, I feel like it doesn't much matter. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.